This week, September 9th, 2014, on The Digital Story. A new camera in iPhone 6. The Apple Watch blockbuster. And a free U2 album, Songs of Innocence, for every iTunes owner. All of this and more from yours truly, Derek Story, on The Digital Story. Welcome back to another Digital Story. So happy to have you here with me. We're running a little bit late today, but I wanted to hold the show until the Apple announcement was over so we could include the news from our friends in Cupertino, and I'm glad I did. Lots to report there. Two new iPhones, an Apple Watch, a free album from U2. I mean, this is good stuff. This is good stuff. But there was other news this week also. So what we'll do is we'll do the weekly update as normal. Then we'll get into the Apple announcements. And then after that, I still have other stories. So we have much to do today. So I better get cracking. We'll start out with the weekly update. Western Digital launches My Passport Wireless Hard Drive, $179, with built-in SD card reader. And this is from DP Review, although it was widely reported on the internet. When a memory card is inserted into the drive, it can be set to back up your photos or automatically ingest all images, then wipe the card clean afterwards. To view your images, you can either connect the drive to a computer using USB 3, or you can connect it wirelessly using the free WD MyCloud mobile app, which comes in both Android and iOS versions. This is very interesting. This drive has a built-in battery with about 6 hours of performance, they say. It can communicate with your mobile devices. You can back up your pictures directly off the memory card. $179 gets you the 1 terabyte drive. And I believe for $249, you can get a 2 terabyte drive. I have a link to the My Passport Wireless Hard Drive from B&H. You can just click on that in the show notes. And once I get mine, I ordered it right away because I think this device has great nimble possibilities for traveling with just the iPad, this device, and my camera. So I would like to try using it during my assignment in New York for Photo Plus in October. So we'll see how that all shakes out. You'll hear more about it, but I wanted to put it on your radar now. I think we're finally going in the direction that we want with this portable wireless storage so that we can back up our images and yet still have access to them without lugging around a laptop. More to come on the My Passport Wireless Hard Drive. In other news, the Sony QX1 and QX30 debut. They debuted last week. And this is from photographyblog.com. Transform your smartphone into an APS-C ILC, interchangeable lens camera, or a 30x super zoom. The Sony QX1 sports a large 20.1 megapixel CMOS sensor, a la the Sony A5000, and a fully functional E-mount lens flange, which means you can add E-mount lenses to it. The QX30 has resolution of 20.4 megapixels and is paired to a 24 to 720 millimeter equivalent f3.5 to 6.3 30 times optical zoom lens. And if you look at them, they look like little, you know, they look like little cans that you attach to your iPhone or to any wireless, I guess any mobile device really. And I shouldn't say iPhone automatically because I'm not even sure, you know, now that I think about it, I'm not even sure they would work with an iPhone. Obviously, they'll work with an Android device. So I don't know the answer to that one. I'll have to check my own link there. But, you know, part of the reason why I don't know the answer to that is I don't understand this product. And maybe some of you on our Facebook page can illuminate me to why you would want to carry something this chunky that you have to attach to your mobile device, tying up your mobile device. Now you can't, you know, use it as easily for other things. And instead of just carrying a premium compact or a mirrorless camera, I just don't get this. And so maybe someone can help me understand both the Sony QX1 and the QX30. But they did garner a fair amount of press. And I thought, okay, I'm going to cover it. And I know one of you out there is going to advocate for it and help me and maybe some of the rest of us understand the wisdom of this device. Okay, and finally, now we're going to go completely the opposite direction. And finally, Lomography unveils the LCA120, the world's most compact, fully automatic 120 camera, 120 as in the film, 120 film size, for $430. I found this on Petapixel at petapixel.com. Features include multiple exposure mode, rear curtain flash sync, and a four-step zone focusing system, with the closest focusing distance being roughly 2 feet. Now, they are saying that this is the world's most compact, fully automatic 120 camera. As we know, medium format cameras tend to be rather large. So, hey, all right. And it's a Holga, really, you know, in all honesty. But it looks kind of cool. And if you've always wanted to play with 120 film and this format, you could buy probably a pretty decent used camera on the market for $430. Or you could go ahead and get this baby, which would definitely be lighter and smaller probably than anything you'd find on the used market. It's just interesting. These guys fascinate me, and I admire them for continuing to advocate for the film enthusiasts out there. So there you go. A medium format camera, $430, takes 120 film. And they have pictures and everything. And of course, I have links to all of this good stuff in the show notes. And that is this week's Weekly Update. Next story. Let's talk about the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus, both announced today. As reported by The Verge, I went ahead and got the specs off their site. I thought they handled their reporting pretty well. However, before I get into the details of the iPhone 6, I will say that I set aside a chunk of my morning to watch the presentation by Tim Cook and company on my Apple TV so that I could take notes and then planning to do the podcast right after the event was over. And I'll tell you, that first half hour or so was rough. I would hate to be those guys that were in charge of broadcasting this event. I got dropped at least a half a dozen times. I had Chinese language voiceover during parts of it. So Tim would be talking, but it would be someone, a woman talking in Chinese. I had numerous test screens. I had out of sync issues. I had a video freezing and then picking up somewhere else. I had it where something would happen and then it would happen again and again. And at one point I thought Tim had lost his mind. Said, you know, Tim, you're really repeating yourself a lot here. Well, it was the video. It wasn't Tim's fault. I mean, it was a mess. It was an absolute mess. It was the fun part about it was watching the tweets about it. I had Twitter going, of course, in part because it was entertaining and in part because I actually wanted to know what was going on when the feed dropped. And so, you know, there were some pretty good jokes on Twitter, I have to say. I did enjoy that. I did add a little spice to the whole thing. But, you know, this was a big deal for Apple, the iPhone 6 and the other announcements, the Apple Watch, and then having you two on stage. So, yeah, pretty nice, pretty good stuff. Too bad the broadcast just did not live up to the rest of the show. That being said, another interesting thing was they led off with the iPhone 6. They got right to it. A lot of times we have to endure at the top of the presentation how Apple retail stores are doing and, you know, market penetration and, you know, rah, 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 a lot of that business stuff. And not this time. Boy, from what I could tell in between feed drops, it was just, let's get to the iPhone 6. Now, you know, when they're leading off with the iPhone 6, that's your top story. They haven't even got to the other stuff yet. You know that it's going to be a big show. So let's talk about the camera in particular in the iPhone 6. You know, you have two larger displays now. That looks pretty good. The design looks excellent. All that sort of stuff. The thing that I was really looking for is, okay, what's going on with the world's most popular digital camera? And The Verge reports it has an 8-megapixel camera with an f2.2 aperture, just like the last model. But the sensor has been upgraded. So they, you know, they kept the megapixel size the same, but we have a new sensor. And this is called what Apple calls the next generation eyesight sensor that has, and here we have a new term here called focus pixels. Focus pixels. This is, again, an Apple term. Those pixels offer DSLR-like phase detection autofocus, which is supposed to be twice as fast as the 5S. Okay, so right away, you get faster autofocus. So that, and you know, that's always a good thing, right? Fast autofocus, I think, is always a good thing. And now it's easier to take high dynamic range photos, HDRs. Both iPhones can take HDR shots with a single click of the shutter rather than a series of shots as before. So again, you know, more processing power. We've got the A8 chip in there. Then, you know, more things can happen under the hood. Now, there's a difference in image stabilization, and here is where the two models part ways a little bit. So the first part was true for both the iPhone 6 and the 6 Plus. Now, when it comes to image stabilization, the iPhone 6 has digital image stabilization, which is very common in these devices. But the iPhone 6 Plus employs an optical stabilizer. So it has an optical image stabilizer. And they were really, you know, talking about how you can, you know, shoot in low light and all this sort of stuff, which I thought they were actually missing the point of an optical image stabilizer. A bit, in the sense that, yes, you know, it does help you when the shutter speed slows down, but when you're shooting with a mobile device in general, there's a lot of, you know, one-handed photography going on, you know, where you're reaching out and you're taking a selfie or, you know, a small group shot of some of you, or you're reaching over your head or you're doing all this stuff. So optical image stabilization would help with just about everything that you're doing with a mobile phone because you're not really using the best camera technique in the world. And in a sense, you can't really use the best camera technique in the world because the device is too small to really hold like a real camera. So I think having this improved image stabilization in the iPhone 6 Plus is a big deal. It looks like it's pretty good stuff. And, you know, people are going to have a decision to make because for some folks, the iPhone 6 Plus might be too big and they don't want something quite that big, but yet they want the optical image stabilization. They're going to have to choose. So we'll see how that all shakes out. Of course, lots to be reported about all of that. And then the other thing that they talked about, of course, is the video. Oh, and also the front-facing EyeSight camera. So we've got a couple things here. So the video has been improved across both phones. They can shoot 1080p video in 30 or 60 frames per second. And then, as The Verge says, there's a fairly stunning 240 frames per second slow-mo video mode too. If you like taking pictures of yourself, you'll be glad to hear that the front-facing EyeSight camera has improved face detection and a new burst selfie mode to help you get the best shot. And by the way, I think in my other notes I had that the iPhone shoots either 8 frames per second or 10 frames per second, the new iPhone 6. And you can actually choose the best shot out of that. So all in all, I would have to say that the camera has some solid improvements. If you own an iPhone 5S right now, I don't think you're probably crying in your beer too much, because these are nice improvements, but there's nothing that's really earth-shattering. I think if you put the picture side by side from an iPhone 5S and an iPhone 6 or a 6 Plus, in most situations, I think the image quality is going to be comparable. I'm sure somebody is going to do that, and we will be able to see it. But if you're sort of holding your breath, if you're an iPhone 5S user and photography is a big deal to you, and you're sort of holding your breath to see if you have to upgrade or not, I would say based on the camera, I would say you probably don't. Now, of course, you know, all the other features of the new iPhone, that may tilt the scales a bit, especially when you get into the electronic wallet thing that they'll be rolling out, you know, later on this year and into early next year. You know, that part's pretty cool. And, you know, just in general, I think the phone is, you know, got overall improvements. So, you know, those other things may tilt the scales a bit for you. But if you're mainly worried about photography and the camera, nah, you don't have to worry about it. And, you know, in fact, even let's go ahead and hop over to the iWatch. I'll hop forward a bit, and then we'll work our way back. If you really have your heart set on an iWatch, which will be coming out in early 2015, you know, the iWatch needs to work with an iPhone. That's, you know, part of how they get everything done in this small device that fits on your wrist. So the iWatch will be compatible, of course, with the new iPhones, the 6 and the 6 Plus, but it will also be compatible with iPhone 5, 5S, and 5C. So there you go. So even if you want to, you know, move forward into iWatch land, you don't have to upgrade your iPhone if you have 5 or above in order to do that. So speaking of the iWatch, it looks pretty cool for a wearable device. I think, you know, Apple has definitely gone to the front of the pack on wearables. The design looks good. They spent a lot of time, you know, offering users options for how the device works, the different types of bands, all the different types of watch faces. The functionality looks solid. The UI looks excellent, as you would expect from Apple. I think, you know, they've taken the crown, which is the little dial off to the side of the watch, and they've made it a digital crown that you can use to control many of the functions of the watch, so that you're not covering the face while you're actually doing something. You know, very Apple-like, very smart. I think that the watch being so configurable already, and this is even before third-party developers really, you know, sink their teeth into it. But unlike the iPhone, I don't know if you remember when the first iPhone came out, but basically you could only do what Apple said you could do with it. It wasn't open to third-party development, and there wasn't that much functionality, really. The iWatch is much different. The iWatch is coming out of the chute with a ton of functionality, all sorts of stuff you can do with it, and it's already open to third-party developers, which means that we're going to see more and more stuff. And this is a device that is just going to be able to go just about any direction someone wants it to go. For example, I'll just give you, for us as photographers, I'll just give you kind of a wacky sort of scenario. You can use your iWatch, the screen on your iWatch, to monitor an image being captured by your iPhone. You know, if you have your iPhone set up remotely or up over your head. Let's say you have your iPhone up over your head. You're at a parade and you can't see. So you put your iPhone camera up over your head. Now you're not going to probably be able to tilt the camera the way that you want and yet be composing, you know, the shot that you want and still be able to see the back of the, you know, the iPhone. So you can monitor the image on your watch while you're holding the camera up over your head and then take the shot that you want. There's going to be tons of stuff like that that's just going to make it really interesting. Here's the thing. At starting price of $349, which is what the Apple Watch is going to sell as, and if I accidentally say iWatch, I probably already have a couple times. Forgive me, I've been hearing that phrase forever, and it's going to take me a while to switch over to the correct term, which is Apple Watch. So you give me a pass on that one. Plus, I'm not editing this podcast today because I want to get it out. I want to get it out in your hands. So anyway, Apple Watch. It's just going to be fun to watch all the different directions it goes, especially for us as photographers, but just everyone, you know, health and fitness, everyday life, communicating with other people. I mean, there's some things I really liked. For example, now if someone texts you, the watch will actually analyze the contents of the text and break down, you know, yes, no, let's go to Denny's on that list. And all you have to do is tap the answer that you want to use as a response instead of having to actually type a response to the text. That's pretty cool stuff. So I think there's going to be a lot there. I just don't know at the price point where it starts and, you know, the whole kind of geeky thing. It's going to be interesting to see how adoption goes outside of the early adopters. And as for me, I'm going to wait and see. It's funny. I am not a curmudgeon by any stretch of the imagination at all. I love new technology. But I'm going to stick with the iPhone 5S and probably wait for the 6S or the 6S Plus or whatever comes out after that. I'd like to see a little bit more action in the camera, personally. And then I'm also going to hang out and see what happens with wearables and see how those refinements go. But it's going to be fun to watch that adoption as it happens and to see what people do with it. And I think these, especially the Apple Watch technology, is going to evolve quickly. So it's going to be plenty for us to talk about in the coming months. Finally, around the Apple event, I thought it was a really nice touch by Tim Cook to have U2, Bono, and company come out on stage and perform. Very nice performance. It was good. It's funny. Twitter just sort of died down for a moment while U2 was doing their thing. And so I enjoyed their performance a lot. It was fun. There was a little awkward banter between Tim Cook and Bono after the presentation, which after the song. Yeah. So, you know, Bono was trying to do his thing and Tim Cook was, you know, being like CEO-like. But the bottom line is after they were, you know, finished mucking around for a little bit there, is that the latest album by U2, Songs of Innocence, which I didn't know about, you know, prior to today, is waiting for everyone who has an iTunes account. You don't even have to download. I think it's just automatically downloading. Now, I went and checked on my iPhone before I recorded this. It says that I've already purchased the album, but it isn't in my library yet. So I think probably the same guys that were running the broadcast truck for the Apple event are in charge of also getting us the music. Probably just too many people to serve at once. But I suspect that the album will be available for me to listen to by the end of the day, by the time I go to sleep tonight. So that's pretty cool. And that's going to be until, I think, mid-October that'll be the situation. Then it'll go on sale generally to the general public. And if you're not an iTunes person, which, you know, most of our folks are that listen to this podcast because that's how they get this podcast, a lot of them, then you can sign up for iTunes and get the album. So I thought that was a really slick way to finish off the event. Great performance by U2. Edge's guitar was really nice. It was fun. And then the album, you know, everyone getting the album, that, you know, that's a pretty sweet thing. So we'll be talking more about all of this up the road, but I just wanted to kind of give you a first brush on it, especially if you were having to work or something and really didn't get a chance to watch it live, or as I should say, try to watch it live. All right, let's go on to the next story. Let's mosey over to the screening room. And I have another fun one today. Photographing and assembling a lunar eclipse composite with Sean Duggan. Or Duggan. I think it's Duggan. Sean Duggan. So Sean, you know, is a good instructor. I've talked about him before. And this is essentially, we've all seen those shots where there's a lunar eclipse and photographer has, you know, the whole eclipse from start to finish in this composite sequence, let's say over a nice mountaintop or something. And if you've ever wondered how to do that, how to put that together, this is what Sean's title is about, Photographing and Assembling a Lunar Eclipse Composite. And he talks about, you know, capture, which, I mean, that right alone is worth watching. You know, how do you effectively photograph the moon, and how do you keep the exposure constant as it's going through the eclipse itself, because this brightness is changing a lot. So how do you compensate for all that and all that kind of stuff? So he talks about that. And then, you know, he gets into, you know, the other aspects of it, which is, you know, assembling, organizing, you know, all the elements of doing this. It's just a fun, tight presentation by Sean that really addresses, you know, this one thing. And even if you're not going to go out and do it, it's just fun to know how to do it. It's one of those things. It's fun to know how to do some of these things. Plus, you always know that the resource is there if you need it. So anyway, you can watch Sean in action by visiting the TDS screening room at lynda.com/thedigitalstory. And while you're there, you can start your 7-day free trial to watch the other design, photography, and computing titles, plus every other topic in the library. But this week's pick by Sean Duggan, Photographing and Assembling a Lunar Eclipse Composite. All right, it's a good one. Let's go to story number 5. We got one more story, and then I'll do a little virtual camera club business. All right, I'm just gonna lay out a few topics for you here, and we'll do a test, and then you can guess where they might be from. Telezoom test. All right, so a telephoto lens test. Slide scanners tested. Wildlife photo tips. Mobile raw processing apps. How the fine art market actually works. And more. Lots more. Lots more. All right, so what's your guess? Where are those topics from? All right, if you follow the Nimble Photographer Journal, you can probably guess. But I'm going to tell you right now anyway. That is a preview of the topics in the fall issue of CT Digital Photography Magazine. And the way that it works is that the magazine itself won't be on the newsstands until after Photokina. So it'll be later in September. Subscribers to the magazine have it already or are getting it right now. I know I got my copy in the mail last Friday. So if you're a subscriber, you get it early and sometimes a lot earlier. And which is cool, because then when you hear people like me talking about it, you go, hey, I already have it. And that sounds interesting. I'm going to read that tonight. Or that will be my weekend reading, or whatever, whenever I have a chance to actually enjoy a well-researched, nicely written photography article. Now, if you're not a subscriber to this magazine yet, I have a link in the show notes you know, just go to thedigitalstory.com and go to the show notes. The podcast is always, you know, the second story on the page. And there's a link there for a 20% discount. So you'll get a 20% discount. You just click on that link, takes you over to the subscriber page, and you get 4 issues. It's a quarterly magazine. And it's funny, calling it a magazine to me doesn't seem quite right compared to the other magazines that I have. The other magazines that I have, I can usually read and possibly reread on a flight from San Francisco to Las Vegas, or maybe Phoenix at the most, and I'm done with them. This magazine, and I put magazine in quotes, it takes me about 2 weeks to actually absorb all the information that's in there, to read it. It's not full of ads. It's full of content. The articles are in-depth and well-researched. It is really something. It's the kind of thing, in all honesty, that you keep on the bookshelf for reference. It's like you're building a reference library of photography information. And a lot of this stuff just doesn't go out of date. The lens tests are there when you need them. And, you know, not only during the life of the lens when it's new, but also if you're considering, you know, buying a used lens up the road. Wildlife photography technique. There's a lot of technique in here. The technique doesn't really change, right? Once you learn how to do something, once you learn how to, for example, in the wildlife article, they talk about photographing wildlife in zoos and places like that, and those sort of tips. That's something that, you know, we do forever. I was doing it when I was 20 years old, and I still do it today. So that kind of stuff doesn't change. A lot of this stuff in there is just what we call in the writing business evergreen content. And that's the way this publication is designed to be interesting and helpful to your photography now, but to also have a nice long shelf life. And also I should mention that if you have an iPad, then there's electronic version that comes with your subscription. So you keep the magazine at home, keep it on the bookshelf, and then you have, you know, the whole library available to you on your iPad. And I think that includes the back issues too, although I'm not absolutely sure on that. I have the back issues, but because I'm an associate editor for them, they may have just given me that. So that I would have to double check, but certainly the issues that you purchase going forward. So anyway, it's something that if you love reading about photography, if you like articles that help you become a better photographer, if you're interested in, you know, real tests that, you know, where they really dig in, I encourage you to take a look at this. So anyway, so the link is over in the show notes, 20% discount for a year. And go over to the site, too. We have a site, www.ct, C as in Carl, T as in Ted, ctdigiphoto.com. And you can get Scoop over there, too. I'm not sure you get 20% discount, but you can see what's going on and really, you know, enjoy it. So anyway, so that, if you answered correctly, I just want to reach through the microphone and shake your hand. And if you're already a subscriber, I hope you are enjoying your latest issue, the fall issue of CT Digital Photography Magazine. Okay, let's get on to a little virtual camera club news here. Sizzlepix, September discount. Now, I heard feedback from Don, Mr. Sizzlepix, that this idea of, well, I'm going to read it. Hopefully you listened to the podcast last week. But if you didn't, the way the discount goes is that the earlier in the month you order, the bigger the discount, because there's 1% discount for every day left in the month. So every day between now and the end of September, SizzlePixel subtract 1% from the cost of your order. So if you ordered last week, you will save more money than if you order right now. However, if you order right now, you will save more money than next week. So 1% for every day left in the month till the end of September. And all you have to do in order to get this discount that you will maybe take advantage of today, if you're thinking about ordering a SizzlePix, is all you got to do is put in the comments field, TDS September discount. Just put that in the comments field and they will subtract the proper amount from your order. Now, so you still can save quite a bit of money, right? Today is the 9th of September, all right? So just do the math, think about it, how much money you'd love to save, and that you can finally get your hands on a SizzlePix to hang on your wall or to give as a gift. And it's an amazing gift because, you know, they are thrilled by the image and they will be blown away by the presentation of that shot because it's like a retina display you can hang on the wall. SizzlePix.com, and they have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. Red River Paper, I've been talking about their Luster Card Duel. They've just released it's a re-release of one of their, I think, one of their best card stocks. But they have an entire card shop there at Red River Paper where they have all the different stocks that you can use to make cards. I got a request today from a client for us to produce some fine art cards for them as part of the job. And I love being able to say, yes, I can. And what surface would you like? And I have envelopes and glassines and everything. All of that you can get at Red River Paper. Fine art cards for the holidays. I'm telling you, this is a hot tip. You're not going to be able to get, let's say, your cubicle mate a 30-inch SizzlePix as much as you would like to. But we just can't afford to be buying 30 or 40 SizzlePix for the holiday. Those are going to be for the special people. But you can make a fine art card for that office cubicle mate that will cost you really like a dollar and a half. And they will love it. And it will be beautiful. If it has your photography on, it's going to be beautiful, right? So anyway, go over to Red River Paper. Take a look at the card shop. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story. And now is the time to be stocking up on your supplies so you can make these beautiful and sometimes last-minute gifts for the holiday. All right, the photo assignment for September 2014 is Shot From Behind. And one of those winners will get a free SizzlePix because they sponsor that, and they will be the SizzlePix pick of the month. And if you haven't done so already, please post a review for the digital story on iTunes. We like those latest reviews. And since you're in iTunes anyway, you can go over and check out your free U2 album. All right, well, that is going to do it for me today. Quite a lot to talk about. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you don't mind kind of the rough presentation here. But like I said, sometimes getting the content out is more important than standing there and polishing it for a few days. All right, next week, regular show, published at the regular time. Until then, have a great week, and I'll see you then. Bye-bye now.